We're in the Rambam's introduction to the 10th chapter of Sanhedrin, and we're holding page Kuf Mem Dalid in Rav Kapach's translation, in the second column, the last row. B'chasho yukayimim l'adam kol ha'yisodot halalu ve'emunato ve'em amitit. And when it's being validated by a person, these foundations of the faith, and when a person's belief in them is true, then he enters among the congregation of Israel. And it is obligatory to love him and to have compassion over him. And all the things that God commanded us, that we have a responsibility to one another, to have brotherly love. So all of those things are relevant to the Jews that subscribe to these 13 foundations of Jewish faith. And even if one has done what he could have of the different sins, because his Yetzer Hara got the better of him, and his lust for things got the better of him, he'll be punished in accordance with how great his rebellion was, but he still has a portion in the world to come because he subscribes to these 13 foundations. Vehumi poshe Israel, he's still going to be considered one of the rebellious, sinful people of Israel, but he still has a portion in the world to come. Vechasher yefakpek adam v'yisod me'ilu ha'yisodot, and if a person is going to put into question, if a person is going to doubt one of these foundations, he has exited from the congregation, from the Jewish people, and we consider it that he has really denied the foundation, the main part of Judaism. Vinikra min, he is called a min, the apikorus, v'kotzetz bintiyot, and he is called one who is cutting the young plantings. V'chova l'shanoto v'lehashmido, we have an obligation to move him away, to excommunicate him. V'alav u'mer halom sanecha Hashem esnan. About such a person, the verse states, those that hate you, God, I hate. V'kvar herachti b'dvarim meod, and I've already spoken a lot about this, says the Rambam, v'yatzati minyan chibui, and I've already left the whole purpose of this compilation to explain the Mishnah. This lengthy introduction, I've digressed. Ela she'asiti ken lefi she'ra'iti she'ze to'elet ve'emuna, but I've done so, says the Rambam, because I see that this is going to help in the belief. Lefi she'ani asafti lecha dvarim rabim mo'ilim, for I have gathered for you many things that are beneficial, that are helpful, hamfuzarim b'chiburim rabim v'gdolim, and if you'd search for these principles, they're scattered. The Rambam says, I've done a lot of work for you in putting together the 13 foundations of the Jewish faith, because there's no other place in which you'll find them all in one place. You'd have to search far and wide to come up with these 13. Haya behem meushal v'chazor. Be happy in these that I've compiled, says the Rambam, and review these words of mine many times, and look closely at what I've written. And if your thought will mislead you and cause you to think that you've understood these 13 foundations of Jewish faith because you've learned it once or 10 times, says the Rambam. If you think after you've learned it 10 times, oh, I got it, I understand the 13 foundations of Jewish faith, Hashem yodea shebesheker hishvita otcha. God knows that it's a lie. Your thoughts have deceived you. It is untrue. You can't attain these 13 foundations of Jewish faith by learning them once or even learning them 10 times. You have to review them many, many times. Ve'al temeher bo, and don't rush through reading these 13 foundations. Because I didn't just write it by the way, however it would work out, the Rambam says. I only wrote what I've written here, these 13 foundations, after much thought, much sitting over the thought and looking into it. Ve'iyun b'deot nechonot uvilti nechonot. And after spending a lot of time researching what was correct and what was incorrect, v'sikum ma she'tzarich la'amin b'hem, and after I've summarized what one must believe in, uveruro b'ta'anot v'ra'ayot al kol inyan v'inyan, only I have after I clarified to myself and gone through all the proofs of each point, did I write what I wrote here. So the Rambam says, even though what I wrote here takes up 2-3 pages, you think, okay, I could read that. I read that once, I read that twice, I read that 10 times, I got it. The Rambam says you have to realize that a lot of work went into researching and coming up with these 13. And reviewing it even 10 times won't be enough to really understand what I've written. Umreta Hashem Yishal, and I ask of God, Lanchoteni b'derech ha'emet, to guide me in a way that's true. V'achzol l'inyanei ha'perek, and I'll return to continue explaining this chapter, the 10th chapter in Sanhedrin. So the Rambam ends by telling us, okay, don't think you understood it. You didn't get it, even if you've learned it once, even if you've learned it 10 times. So this is the first time we went through the 13 principles here in this class. And now we have to decide what we're doing next. So I don't mind reviewing the 13 principles. And I don't mind moving forward to Igeret Teiman, or Igeret Tchiyat HaMetim, or some other work of the Rambam.
Can you speak about some of the ideas in here?
Ah, so we could do that. We could review what we did. We could get an overview.
I'm curious, in the last statement it says, we talked about Epicurus. We talked about petting the planets. And what I'm curious, what is the nature of an Epicurus? I know that somebody that transgresses, but it seems like people on a high level have become Epicurus. And so is it, do I be an Epicurus? Is it a misunderstanding, or is it a willful transgression of? Because it seems like in one instance it's confusion. I'm confused. Is it? Do I take it? Something out of context? Do I say avis tzitzit? They have to be seen. So yeah, hang them on a wall, and now they're seen. But if I'm wrong, if I don't wear them, am I an Epicurus? If I go by a lesser opinion and I'm wrong, then at what point does my misunderstanding become a transgression significant enough to be an Epicurus?
So I think that referring to your last example, Chazal included within the Mishnah the minority opinion, and Chazal did not hide from us that within our sages there were different opinions. Let's take a more radical example. What makes a person a Jew? So it's a machloket tanaim. Is it if both parents are Jewish? Is it if the mother is Jewish? What is it that makes him Jewish? So there are different opinions. We rule that the mother is the one that defines whether he's Jewish or not. But that's a big machloket tanaim. Makes a big difference. When we analyze questions in halakha and even in Jewish thought, so we have to recognize that we're approaching a system that has a tradition of how the system should work. And I think the difference between someone who says I'll wear tchelet today and someone who says I'll hang my tzitzit on the wall are the opinions that he's adopting within the halachic framework. When Tzadok and Baitus came along and they said, we're not accepting the oral law and we're going to start defining the Torah according to our own understanding without the tradition, and then they developed the Sadducees, the Baituses, who later became known as the Karaim. Karaim, like the word kra, like mikra, that they think that they can go just by the verse, the written word, without the tradition of how to understand it. So they broke from our tradition. And then we say, so if they say that al yetze ish min kumo b'yom ha'shvi'i, no man should leave their domain on the seventh day, means you can't leave, you got to stay within your house. So we say that's not an opinion within halacha. That's someone who says I'm not accepting the tradition of how the halachic process works and the tradition of how we're supposed to understand the verses. I'm interpreting it my own way, and there are people who do that today as well. It's unfortunate, but those aren't opinions that enter the realm of halacha. So if one goes with that, one is, in effect, one is an apikoros. But if one is within the framework of halacha, and one chooses to adopt an opinion within the framework of halacha, so one might err, and one might be wrong in taking upon his own shoulders to decide which opinion he's going with. Meaning, it might be a mistake, but that doesn't make him an apikoros. Let's say a person learns, and after learning, he comes to the conclusion that, there's a machloket, can one return things to blech on Shabbos? Can you put back cold soup? So the Yemenites, they go with the Rambam. The Yemenites say that ein bishul achal bishul, even belach, even with liquid, you could take something liquid that was previously cooked. If you have water that was cooked, you could put it back on the blech. Ashkenazim hold that might even be a biblical cooking. You have cold water, you put it on the blech, you just cooked that water. Someone says, I just did tshuva, I learned this Gemara, I learned the opinions in the Rishonim, I'm going to go with the opinion of the Rambam or whichever one it is that says, En bishul achal bishul belach. So he might not have a right to make that call. He might be making an error in the responsibility he's taking on his shoulders. But nonetheless, he went with the halachic opinion. It's not the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch. It's not the opinion of the Rama. But there is such a halachic opinion. There's a limit how far we can take that. If someone says, well, I'm going to say that this person isn't Jewish because only his mother's Jewish, not the mother and the father. And there is a Tanakh opinion that says we need both. So then we say, hey, get out of here. What's going on here? That's not the way the halach has been defined for the last 1,500 years. Even then, we'll tell him he's a fool. I don't think we'll call him an apikoros. So I think the defining characteristic over here is he within the framework or outside of the framework? Now, even within the framework, one can err. Just because one rules one way and everyone else rules differently doesn't mean he has erred. When we have Mishnayot where one Tana has one opinion and everyone else disagrees with him, doesn't mean he's in error. He ruled according to his understanding, and he might be right. We say that Elu ve'el divrei Elokim chayim, that both of them have truth. But that's within.
But he has a minority opinion, so we go with the majority opinion.
So usually in halacha we're going to adopt the majority opinion, but sometimes we're going to say that in situations of a shatat chak we'll go with the minority opinion. Just because we went the majority opinion doesn't mean that the minority opinion disappeared, and that's why it's quoted in Mishnah, because sometimes we do rely upon the minority opinion. Nonetheless, this is all within the framework of halacha. When someone starts hanging tzitzit on the wall, he's exiting the framework of halacha. There's no such tradition, there's no such opinion within the framework of halacha. Okay, it's the equivalent to someone building his own altar and saying, I'm going to have my own religion. That's not the Torah. That's when one becomes an apikoros.
I read in Mishlei recently, a wise man learns from every person. And I thought of Rabbi Meir learning from Acher. Now, Acher obviously made a mistake, and he changed some things about his learning. But Rabbi Meir said, "Okay, I'm still going to learn by him." So it's obviously Rabbi Meir is on a completely different level that I can understand. So he could understand where to pick from, what to pick from, and what not to pick from.
You see, even other Tanaim. Even the other great rabbis of that generation didn't go with Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir was exceptional. And according to some opinions, according to one opinion in Tosas, one of the reasons that they taxed Rabbi Meir, that they didn't quote verses in his own name, was because he learned from Acher. Why did they change him to Acherim Omrim? So Rabbi Meir went and learned from Acher, and the rabbis didn't agree with it. According to one understanding, they said it's good for him and not good for everyone else. According to the other understanding, they said he shouldn't be doing it either. So, it's in general, we say one should find a Rebbe who's going to teach him the correct way, and one shouldn't play with fire and start saying, well, much of what he's saying is good, I'll take what's good. We say that we can't trust ourselves to do that.
Because there's some very strong opinions in Judaism today about extremely one way. You know, so there are certain groups that say this is the way, this is the way, our way is the way.
So I think the higher up you go, if you speak to the rabbis who are leading the different, if you want to call them sects or movements within Judaism, you won't find them saying that the other ones are apikors. They might say we disagree with them. They might say they're wrong. They won't say that if they touch a bottle of wine, you can't drink that wine. They're apikors. They won't say if don't marry into their family. They might say, well, they're going in a route that we feel is incorrect halachically. But they won't say that if you go high up. If you go low down to the students of the students of the students who don't know much, so then you'll find extremism and all kinds of things being said. But that's not reflective of knowledge. Again, I'm not referring to things that are outside the realm of halacha. I'm talking about within the realm of halacha.
Question.
Yeah.
Sanhedrin existed to decide exactly in these cases when the one group said this is our halacha and the other group said this is our halacha. The Sanhedrin decided which halacha is the halacha you should go with, right or wrong?
Right.
So, if it would be possible to reestablish a Sanhedrin, would it be realistic to say that there's room in between many groups of Jews, of halachical correct Jews, but they were divided into different sects because they are following different halachot? Could it be
minimized?
Yeah.
So that's a question of opinion. That's and if you want my opinion, I'll tell you, but I'm not sure it's worth much. It's my opinion.
I would like to hear.
So the problem of the Jewish people not being unified is a problem that dates back approximately 2,500 years. Since the period of the Second Temple, we've had this issue. So within the Second Temple, you had problems with the Karaim, Tzadukim, Baitusim, but it wasn't only that. We say that the Second Temple was destroyed over Sinat Chinam, hatred that was purposeless and unfounded. The Netziv writes that during the period of the Second Temple, and I think he means throughout, until his day, there was a problem that people were calling one another apikores. What we just learned, the concept of apikores. If you didn't follow someone else's way of halacha and hashkafa, then you're an apikores. And the Netziv writes that when we say that the Book of Bereshit is called Sefer HaYashar, and that the Avot, the forefathers, were called Yesharim, they were straight, this means that they were able to accept other people who were different than them. Interesting, we think if someone were straight, so I know what's right, and anything different than me is wrong, and I can't accept anyone else, right? That's what we think. Comes in the Tziv and says, no. The Avot were called Yesharim, and part of their straightness was that they were able to accept other people who were different than them. And we lost that. Now, we had a Sanhedrin throughout the period of the Second Temple, and we had great rabbis after the Second Temple, and that didn't seem to solve the problem. So that's the first thing we have to think about. If we think that the Sanhedrin is going to solve the problem, so assuming you could put together a Sanhedrin that everyone would approve of, I'm not sure that would solve the problem. And the second thing is that the odds of putting together a Sanhedrin that would be accepted are very low, because the concept of reinstating the smicha was brought by the Rambam, and during the time of the Beis Yosef, the Rav Yosef Karo wanted to reinstate the smicha, and the great rabbis disagreed with him. So if Rav Yosef Karo couldn't do it in his generation, I don't think we have anyone today that comes close to Rav Yosef Karo. So the odds of us getting it done and getting it done in a way which would minimize machloket and not maximize machloket, I think are nil. I don't think it's reasonable to think that we'd be able to get it done. You never know. Again, it's a guess. But that's what I think we can learn from history, but that's just an opinion. That's like you could say differently. Anyone could say differently. That's my opinion.
Because I think it's a kind of senseless not to discuss about things which aren't that important. For example, what I never understood is the behavior of some Sephardim who say, even if that is clearly against the ruling of the Sephardi rabbis, they say, I don't eat at the Ashkenazi house if they serve beef. Because I don't know if the Ashkenazi don't eat halak. No. Which is clearly against the ruling. The Sephardi rabbis say, a Sephardi going to an Ashkenazi house, and even if the beef is not halak, he can eat it.
Are you sure every Sephardi rabbi says that?
My Sephardi rabbi says it, and the other...
Your rabbi. You have to see what other rabbis say.
That's even worse. I mean, if it is not halak, it doesn't mean it is not kosher. It is just not halak. Is it not controlled in the way the Sephardi tradition wants it to be controlled? But it's still kosher meat.
Let's learn the laws of halak. Let's learn it. I don't know when we'll get to it, but we have to learn it and then see how it goes. It's for sure that the Torah said, "Lo titgo to do." The Torah didn't want us to branch out into different groups, into sects. We're supposed to be a unified Jewish people. At the same time, the 12 tribes had 12 different versions of prayer. There wasn't one set prayer. There were differences, and each tribe had its own court, and the courts didn't always rule the same. And in Rav Yossi's town, so people ate milk with chicken because he held that was permitted. And in Rabbi Eliezer's town, when they had a bris milah on Shabbos, they chopped down the wood and prepare a knife and do all the preparations that the rabbis held were biblically forbidden, and one would be obligated, would get the death penalty for doing, but he was the rabbi in that town and he held that you're permitted to do it. So they did it. They did it to show how much they loved the mitzvah of brit milah. So this isn't a new concept that rabbis will rule differently and in their town we go with their ruling. There's a concept of maradata. There's a concept that within one town you can't have two courts ruling differently. But it doesn't mean that within Judaism you can't have two courts ruling differently. So it's not so simple to say everyone has to accept everything, because we see not that way. We see that some towns had the custom that they didn't work Erev Pesach at all, and some said you don't work from Chatzotan on. And the rabbis didn't say, well, everyone should adopt one custom. They said, no, there's a custom going this way and there's a custom going that way. Some towns had the custom that two brothers didn't go into a mikveh together, and other towns didn't have that custom. So when Rebbe's two children came to a town where they had that custom, and they went to the mikveh together, and they didn't realize that was a custom there, and everyone started yelling at them, don't you know two brothers aren't allowed to go into a mikveh together? So they didn't tell them, no, it's permitted, what are you talking about? There's no such halacha. They didn't say that. They said, oh, we're sorry, because they said, we have to respect the minhag of this town. So we find, even during the time that the great rabbis were around, in the time of the Tanaim, in the time of the Sanhedrin, the rabbis didn't feel like Judaism has to be uniform. Certain halachot were defined by the Sanhedrin, and certain things were left to each town with their minhag and their rabbi. And I don't know enough about why the rabbis let it go this way. Maybe because that opinion was valid, maybe because they couldn't overtake that opinion. I'm not sure what the history behind it was, how much of it was by their consent and how much was just by default. I don't know. But we don't find that in those generations opinions were abolished. They didn't say everyone has to be uniform going the same route, as far as I know.
No, but basic things that we like, which melachot is allowed on Shabbos? Is it allowed on Shabbos to open a wine bottle or not? Many Ashkenazim say no, most of the Sephardim say yes. What is kosher enough? Halak or the normal kosher? I mean, these are basics.
And these things, the High Court would probably rule, right?
About the Nusach Yodavanin. Okay, that's no big deal. And especially when you live in Israel, you will find your synagogue, you can daven in according to your Nusach. That is not a big problem. So, but really, like the fundamentals, like Shabbat and Kashrut, I think in this case there shouldn't be a...
I hear.
There should be one ruling for every Jew.
In theory, I hear, but in practice, I don't see us getting there.
That's
okay. So, What do you guys want to learn next? We want to do Akshat Avrechim.